Hello, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of What the Hal? This is Hal Eisner. And you know what? This is a tough one because we just had mass shootings in Gilroy, California, El Paso, Texas, Dayton, Ohio. And so we wanted to have a conversation about mass shootings. So we brought in three people directly involved in them. One involved in the borderline shooting in Thousand Oaks. Two involved in the Las Vegas massacre at the Mandalay Bay Hotel. Let's meet our guest, Tiffany.
I'm Tiffany Weezer.
I'm Diane Weezer, Tiffany's mom.
And I'm Steve Campbell.
All right, and these people are all people that have been through a lot. And what we're going to talk about today is this situation with mass shootings we just saw in El Paso, we just saw in Dayton, Ohio. Tiffany was shot three times in Las Vegas during the massacre there outside the hotel, and you were shot what, in the hand, in the abdomen,
and the elbow,
in the elbow. Steve was not shot, but he was one of the last to be pulled out by the SWAT team at Borderline in Thousand Oaks, and so you had that experience. And you know, Diane, mom, she took her two girls to Las Vegas to go to that concert. They went to that concert, and mom was across the street and found out there was a shooting and her daughter was shot. And so let's start with Diane, because what was that like to get that phone call?
Horrible. Something you don't want to hear. And you wish you could have been in their place.
It's hard.
She was young. She was in high school. And she was alone.
You're getting emotional.
It was horrific. Nobody knows what we went through unless you were there. It was chaotic. It was just bad as a mom because we protect our children and she's our youngest, and it was supposed to be a happy thing. She was going for as a birthday present, and it all went wrong the last day. Almost the last hour. She was supposed to be back at the room at 10. She should have been back.
It's been a while since that shooting, and yet it just doesn't go away.
No, it doesn't. I've gone through lots and lots of therapy. But when you see it on TV over and over again, it brings it all back. And I feel for all those parents.
Tiffany, you're hearing your mom. I know there's been plenty of tears shed in your house. I know that. How are you feeling? How many months has it been now? 22 months, and yet we hear your mom's voice cracking like that. How are you dealing with this?
It makes me emotional because I don't know what it's like as on my mom's side. I know what I went through, and it doesn't make me as emotional, but I can see why it makes her so emotional, and I don't understand like she does, but I can see why.
Steve, you know, we've talked before, mm-hmm. and you fortunately were not shot.
No.
That's good. But you ducked under a bar in order to save your life.
Yeah, the bar above my head was taken out.
What was that like? I mean, I can't even imagine.
I mean, the hard part is you don't know what's going on. And like my job was to make sure that, because if I got shot, then the little girl I was got shot. And that was like my main concern. Other than
so you had a young 18-year-old, something like that.
Yeah, she good thing she was small because I'm a big person. So trying to hide us both. And he turned off the lights, so that helped me a lot because he threw smoke bombs in there. So we couldn't see. We could just see the laser. And we could just hear people, you know, like hitting the floor.
You must have been thinking, this is my worst nightmare.
Yeah, especially when you can't. You don't know what's going on.
I didn't think about that idea, the lights being off and the lasers and
smoke.
Bombs
and then, but the dead silence for 25 minutes was almost just as bad because all you hear is cell phones going off and you know that they're not going to get picked up.
Did you feel like the next bullet might be yours?
After every gunshot, I heard every gunshot in there, and it's like I knew when he killed himself because I heard him go in the office. I know that place like the back of my hand, and when I heard him go in the office and. You know, you hear it's a couple of minutes go by and you just hear one bolt, like one gunshot. It's like, you know. But I didn't know how many there were, so I wasn't going anywhere.
Did you know the shooter?
I recognize him, but I didn't know him personally.
You had seen him before.
Yeah, he was there the week before, I think, for Halloween, which is, we celebrate my birthday then. So I'd recognized him. I'd seen him there before, but I wasn't friends with him or anything like that.
So before Borderline happened, Las Vegas happened. Before Las Vegas happened, Sandy Hook happened. Before all these things had happened before it ever got to Thousand Oaks.
Yeah. When it happened, I'm not surprised that it happened. I thought about it all the time. I had so many friends that went through Route 91. You know, it's like I couldn't imagine what they were going through. So
91 being the Route 91 festival in Las Vegas.
Yeah, so you think about, you know, it's like we had thought about it. You know, it's like, what if somebody just comes in here? It's like, but you don't think that it's actually going to happen. You just think about, like, well, what would I do?
Can I tell you an interesting aside? This morning, we heard something about maybe somebody being at the USA Today headquarters in Virginia, maybe with a gun. It was just, you know. And so some of us thought in the newsroom, where's that door we're supposed to go through if there's an active shooter? Mm-hmm. Because we've had active shooting training here. And we found that door, and we went out that door. And I got to tell you something. I never really paid that close attention until today when we walked out that door, and I thought, you know, this could actually happen sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, do you always go around looking for the exit door? Do you always go around looking over your shoulder? Do you always go around thinking, am I going to get through this okay?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Should I expand on that?
For the first, I don't know, how many months, no matter where I walked into, I, like, scanned everybody in there. And I knew who I didn't feel comfortable with. And I kept a close eye on them. And I found all the exits that I, and all the possibilities if something happened, which way I was going to go.
Alicia Olive was a bartender at the Las Vegas massacre site. She also, while not shot, she had to run, and she had injuries, but she also went to Gilroy, to the Garlic Festival. That's like not one, but two mass shootings that she had to go through. Can you imagine that? I mean, she told me, she said, I think there could be a third sometime. I mean, she really thinks that there could be a third if she got caught in two. And this seems to be coming, I don't want to say the new normal, because I don't want to believe that's the new normal. But that's what people say.
One of my good buddies that I lost at Borderline was at Route 91. He was on TV helping, I mean, interviewing, because they were transporting. His shirt was all bloody, and
he died.
He died at Borderline. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you lose friends. You're lucky you didn't lose yourself. You know, when you think about this stuff. Now, you're a gun owner, and Diane, your husband has a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Does that color your feelings at all about this?
No.
So
my husband's responsible.
Your husband's responsible. Okay, good.
And he doesn't have a mental health issue.
And husband, you've now heard your wife say this on camera and in studio, so it's on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not responsible, you come back, you tell me.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And so, Steve, you're a gun owner. I mean, you hear the debates going on. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, obviously, I'm all for background checks. You know, if you can show that you have the mental capacity to fire and operate a gun, you know, or even carry, why not? I'm not afraid of somebody. Like, I wish that somebody, when I was going through that, I wish that there was somebody there with a gun. I wish there was a good guy there with a gun, because, you know, it's not like I would see somebody, you know, trying to put him down and be like, no. You know, it's like I wish more than anything that there was somebody there, because I didn't have anything on me, you know.
We're not a concealed state. We're not a carry state. And so that's not in the cards.
You can have a concealed carry.
Well, if you have a license. You have to be a police officer or something to get that, right?
No.
You can be a store owner.
In Terry County, you can be for sure.
So is that a county-by-county thing?
It is, yeah. You can get it. If I wanted to, I can go get a concealed carry permit.
So do you think if more people had guns, that would make a difference?
Absolutely. I mean, he did that with a .45.
Yeah, but I want you to think about something. In Dayton, Ohio, 30 seconds, 9 people dead.
Yeah.
It could take you 30 seconds to pull the gun out of your pocket.
Nope.
No. How fast would you pull that gun out of your pocket?
3.5 seconds loaded.
3.5 seconds. You've practiced that.
It's so much faster than you think. 30 seconds, I mean,
And if well, you, I don't know. I don't have a gun, seconds, and I don't really know.
Yeah, no, so. If it takes you 30 seconds, you're intoxicated, and you shouldn't be fired.
I mean, I'm not even good with water guns at this right? point. So, but I mean, so you could pull a gun out fast enough and prevent some of those nine from being killed.
Absolutely. I mean, anybody that's shot a gun, you know, regularly or I mean, practices, that's a part of a concealed carry permit. Is you have to show that you are a good shooter. You have to show that you know the gun. And you know the gun laws.
Well, so and you have to make you have to be a good shooter because you don't want to shoot somebody else accidentally.
Absolutely, that's why when people think of concealed carry, it's like no, that's a good thing because they make sure that you are competent. You know, it's not like most people that are going to carry a gun. They're only going to carry it if they feel comfortable. If they're not comfortable, they're not going to carry it. It's not in the Wild Wild West.
But it's not like we haven't had one of these mass shootings in a place where people might have guns.
Well, I mean, like Walmart, there was one guy with a gun, but, you know, it's like, but you don't, you know, he didn't shoot anybody else. He didn't, you know, it's like he didn't even use it because I don't know why, but maybe he didn't feel comfortable with it, which is a good thing. If you're not comfortable, you shouldn't be shooting.
Well, we can't second guess what the guy thought. We can't speculate on what the guy thought.
I don't know what he went through, so I don't know, you know.
I've just always wondered if I was in a position where I needed to pull a gun out of my pocket to try to save people's lives. Would I be able to do it?
That's a huge question.
Well, I think I'd shoot myself in the foot. I don't think I could do it. I don't have that kind of confidence.
Well, if it was me and my children, I would use it.
Yeah.
I guess
you put
it that
way, yeah.
It's for protection. It's not just to shoot somebody. Like, the mass shootings are happening. They don't even know these people, you know? Even if you do know a person, you don't do that. But it's for protection.
All right. So these things happened. El Paso and Dayton, and did that push buttons, did that trigger anything in your mind?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I remember hitting a YouTube video and hearing the shots. And I had to turn it off. And I ran down the hallway. I'm like, oh, my God. It's here. And it's just so much emotional that we go through. And I know all these people are going to go through it, too. Why? Unnecessary.
Tiffany?
It's hard for me to watch, and especially hearing the gunfire, but because I know what they're going to go through, I know how long it takes to be able to go back into these certain places. For example, in El Paso, it was at a grocery store, and mine was at a concert, but even going to the grocery store for the first couple months was really hard, so I can't even imagine how much it's going to take for them to just go back to these simple places.
What triggers did you find when El Paso happened?
Just
yeah, anything? I mean, did you suddenly get goosebumps or something happened?
Anxiety. Anxiety occurs, and then just the whole day, you just don't feel like yourself. I just felt for these people.
You guys have had a lot of therapy, right?
Lots.
Not Steve.
No.
Not Steve.
Not yet.
But you two ladies have had a lot of therapy.
Our whole family.
Your whole family. And so is this like for the rest of your life now?
Yeah. Not as much, but when a shooting does happen, it brings it all back, and I feel a need to pick up the phone and call and make that appointment. And it's never going to go away. It's just going to get better.
You know, I want to just open up one line of questioning and see what you guys think. But, you know, a lot of people sit at home by themselves. They live alone or whatever. And then they hear about these shootings, and they see it on the news, and they see the aftermath, and the chaos unveils right live in front of you, and you see the surveillance cameras and all of that. There's a good side to that. There's a bad side to that. But the fact of the matter is, for people who might live alone, they see this, they become emotional, they become upset, they're affected by it. Is there anything that you guys would recommend to people who might be at home? I know this isn't your expertise. I know this isn't something that you're very comfortable probably talking about, but you've been there. You've been there. And you know what people might be able to do. What would you recommend? Let's start with Diane.
You have to express your feelings, whether it be like pick up that phone and call your sister, pick up that phone and call for a doctor's appointment. But you have to let it out. You can't keep it in.
Something cathartic.
Yeah, you have to let it out. It will make you feel better.
Otherwise, you're going to blow up like a balloon and bust.
That's kind of what happened to me. I was like the leader of the family and just getting people forward.
always trying to get them to be positive. And the therapist noticed. She's like, you haven't ingested this. Your actions are not normal. And it was kind of, I put up a block and I just wanted to make sure everybody else was okay in getting where they needed to go. Tiffany had doctor's appointments. There was so much going on in our family, and somebody had to lead us. And I went to a psychiatrist and she said, it's gonna hit. Not now, but it will. It took about 4 months. I was in the car driving by myself because I didn't want nobody to know how I really felt. I wanted to be strong for everyone. And I was, because everybody said it. They're like, you're so strong, you're so strong. But they didn't know what was really going on. But it happened. It was good that it happened. That was good for me to let it happen, let it all out. And it was easier to move on.
It's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard. And I want to give you a big cyber hug here, because I feel the pain you're feeling, I think. And I'm sorry that we're even having this conversation and bringing it out of you like that. But sometimes that helps too, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So when you talk about it, it's cathartic. You're able to get what's inside out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Is Steve same for you?
Oh yeah, I talk about it all the time, especially my friends that were there. That's my therapy, because I knew everybody there. So being around them helps me, because they know what I'm going through. So it's easy. You know, we just, you know, it's like everyday life for us.
But, you know, I want to think about for one moment what Diane just said. The grieving process is really an interesting process if somebody dies in the family and you go through that process. So I remember when my dad passed away, natural causes. Nothing unusual. But I remember that if I were driving in the car and I got to a stoplight, I'd burst out into tears. Now, it wasn't because I heard a song on the radio. It wasn't because I said, Dad and I have been at this intersection before. It's just what your body does. It's just what your body does. And it's like a valve. And it opens up and the tears start rolling down your face.
It's your pressure relief valve.
Right. And that's exactly what happened to her months after the shooting, right? The
yes.
pressure release valve.
But up until that point, I just didn't want my family to know that I was weak. I just had to get them through it.
You had to be the strong one.
I had
the family.
To be the strong one.
Tiffany, was mom strong?
Yes.
She was?
Extremely. She always, yeah. She.
What would you tell your mom right now? Go ahead. I want you to look at mom. Let's play a little exercise here. I want you probably have not yet in 22 months expressed something to your mom that you've felt. Is there anything like that in your heart that you'd like to say?
Yeah. At the beginning, me and my mom fought a lot because she was always like, you need to move on. And that's just not what I wanted to hear. And so I was always like, you don't understand. But now that I look back at what, like, I needed to hear that. I needed to know that I couldn't stay in that spot. And so she always made it possible. She's the one that set up my psychologist and psychiatrist appointments. So her making me do it was a big help, because I have no idea where I'd be today if I didn't.
Is there anything you want to tell your daughter that you haven't told her in 22 months?
No, I think I've told her all. I always told her I love her. We're so happy to have you. We're lucky. And we don't want to be where we were yesterday. We need to move on.
Yeah,
we
gotta move on.
We only go forward. We can't go backwards.
Right.
I said that many, many times.
Steve, I don't want to leave you out of this, Steve, because your mom's sitting in the room, too. And while she's not at a microphone, is there anything you want to tell your mom?
Just that I love her. She tries to get me to go to therapy, I think, every day. And I push back, but like she only looks out for my best interest every day.
I'm sure that's true.
And she checks in every single, even when I disappear on the weekends and I go to Huntington Beach, she's always, like, I think I worry her a lot, but, like, I love you.
and mom, even though you're not on a microphone, you love him too?
I do.
She said I do. I just want, for the record, just for the record, All right, I want to give everybody a chance to sort of give some final thoughts. And I really would like to start with Steve here. And, you know, I don't want to get into the debate over gun legislation and all of that, but it feels like there is a real tidal wave of feeling that something's got to happen, that it just can't
be. We can't just sit back and – because it's just got to keep happening.
Yeah. So what's the answer? And maybe you don't have one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – obviously, nobody knows the answer yet, or we would be having this. But I don't think that. Obviously, what we're doing now isn't cutting it. And I mean, background checks, whatever it is, you know, something's got to be done. I just don't know. You know, I think it's something in our culture, and I don't know what the answer to that is.
No, and I think that's reasonable. I think a lot of people don't know what the answer is right now. And I want to ask you, Diane, if Congress people are listening to this podcast, and I certainly hope that everybody in the House and the Senate listens to What the Hal, because if they don't, they should, right?
Right.
But I'd like to know what would you say to them if they're listening to this podcast?
Well, they better sit at a table and start figuring it out. It's not going to take one person. It's going to take a lot of people sitting and giving their ideas, because I don't know the answer. But I do know we need to do something. And we need to help all these young people that are dying needlessly.
I mean, I understand. You know? I understand a lot of this. Intellectually, I get this, that guns don't shoot themselves, that people pull triggers. And that's one line of logic. The other line of logic is that bad people get a hold of weapons and they use them. And so the weapons do become facilitated by the people that have bad intent. But if they couldn't get to the weapons, then maybe we wouldn't see the mass shootings. I'm not suggesting that we don't have weapons. I'm suggesting that maybe there need to be some red flag laws, some better background checks, things like that. There was a situation about a week ago where we had a guy who was in a pursuit here in Los Angeles, and then there was a deputy-involved shooting in which this guy ended up getting shot in the upper torso. I talked to the mother of the suspect driver, and the mother said that she got up in the morning and he drank bleach. He drank bleach. We think that might have been to kill himself. And then she called the police, and the police said, well, there's nothing we can do until he commits a crime. And then he proceeded to commit a whole lot of crimes, like failure to stop, felony evading. He got involved, and he hit a deputy, and he got shot. But that could have been stopped somehow, right?
Did they know he had a firearm?
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah. I was wondering, like, did she know?
But the police said was, we can't do anything until he commits a crime. And that's even if you have a gun. Yeah. If you don't commit a crime, they can't come and investigate that.
Yeah.
But if you had a red flag law, and you said, we have somebody who... And she told them that her son was mentally unstable, that he was off his meds, and that he drank bleach.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that wasn't
enough
to get the police.
Well, that's not their fault. That's whoever's making our laws. I mean, that's legislative.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If there had been a red flag law in place there, and somebody could have said, I've got a red flag issue here, maybe the police could have stopped that, and all of that chaos might not have happened.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. So... my husband has a gun, and it's registered. My kids have been around them before. We went to Vegas for the girls when they turned 21. They went and shot guns, automatic weapons, too. And it's fine to own them, but not if you have a mental status that you're going to hurt other people.
So
if you're mentally unstable, you have a weapon that could hurt and kill people. You shouldn't have one.
So how do we as a society go about the business of finding out who's mentally unstable until they do something that shows they're mentally unstable?
Well, my daughter that was there also, she had to see a psychiatrist, and one of her first questions when she left was, will I ever be able to own a gun? And I said, that's a good question. I don't know. You've seen a psychiatrist. Is that a mental status? Is that a red flag that they would give her? I don't think she should have one. She's thinking she wants to protect herself because she's been through this mass shooting.
So
she was a sitting duck.
That's a conundrum right there. Because you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So if you had rules like that, and she's mentally affected by what happened in her life, then maybe she would come up as a red flag because she might not be mentally together?
Maybe.
Yeah. Tiffany, you're nodding your head. See, yeah. It's dangerous to nod your head around me because I'm going to call on you next.
I just think it's true. Because I know, like, in the military, if you've seen a psychiatrist or someone, you're, like, red flagged, then you possibly are kicked out. So that, I can see that. I can see why it would make someone red flagged for being.
Tell me why you're wearing an orange ribbon.
The orange ribbon's for the 58 who passed away, and it's to honor them.
You think about them?
All the time. I try to be a better me because I feel like I have a little bit of life to live out for them also because theirs was cut so short.
Do you ever have sort of a guilt trip that why me and not them or why them and not me?
Yes. Comes up pretty often and it's really hard to get out of those slumps because there really is no answer to why them and why not me or, you know, vice versa. But I've had it with therapists, and they've tried to explain how to get out of it. So I just work on that because I know there's something. There's a reason why.
You're here, and that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're okay after being shot 3 times.
Yes.
And I think that's extraordinary because if I was shot once, I'd probably
right.
I probably couldn't get it together. You know, I'd probably be affected for forever. And you know, it is to your credit that you're able to come out of that, know where the scars are, and think about, got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
It is to your credit. And it is to your credit that you went through that, Steve, and you will not let that affect your life, that you're going to continue to live your life and not be affected by it. But I just want to know, each of you, do you look over your shoulder when you're in a crowd?
Yes.
Yes. Steve?
No.
No. Mom?
No.
So, see, Tiffany is the one that's most affected here by that sort of thing.
She was there and she heard I wasn't there.
Yeah.
Tall buildings. I'm a little scared of noises. Yeah. It's a lot.
Every time you hear a backfire?
Yeah.
Popcorn?
But, yeah, you won't even think. Like, books slamming on the desk, it's there. Random noises.
Yeah, yeah. I was almost going to joke and drop my phone on the table. Now I don't think I'm going to do that because I don't want to freak you out. All right, I want to thank all of you. Let me just get a final thought, and we'll start with Steve and go around the room. And what's sort of your final thought as we find ourselves in yet another situation?
I think if you're going to get anything out of it, if you're sitting at home and you're watching on the news, it's a good reminder that, you know, it doesn't mean you can't go out, but it means that you need to, you know, be aware of your surroundings, you know, and be prepared. No one knows what they're going to do when this happens. You can say you're going to do everything. I'm going to do this if I have to go through this, but you don't know until you go through it, and you don't, the situation might not even let you do that.
But when it happened, you ducked.
Yeah.
You didn't try to run out because you knew you couldn't make
it. No, I watched my friends run out. I knew I didn't have time, so I just grabbed a little girl and went down. And I don't even move that well. I was hurting for like 3 days because I was so sore. And, you know, it's like it's a good reminder that, you know, this can happen anywhere, and, you know, so, you know, be aware. It doesn't mean you have to live in fear, but, you know, maybe, you know, be offensive about it, I guess.
Offensive, yeah, not offensive.
Not offensive.
Difference of the two words, right. Mom, Diane?
So when you're sitting at home and you're watching it, and you physically are not there or being affected by it, we need to know that for me and my family, we still live life and we continue. It doesn't stop us. We have to live life. Tiffany's been to a concert. Oh, my God, did I? That day was terrible. Like, oh, my God, is she coming back? But it was also great that she walked out and did it.
And then their parents who don't have the ability to look at their kids anymore because they're gone.
You're right. Yeah, but we have to live life, you know. And all those concert goers, all those people at the venues, they were living life. when they hit this tragedy, whether they made it or didn't, they were living life, and we got to continue to do that. We can't board ourselves up. That's not life.
Tiffany?
Yeah, you can't live your life in fear, as hard as it is, and it's going to feel at the beginning. You have to force yourself to get out there again. One of the biggest things my therapist told me was every time you go out and something doesn't happen, you feel more okay with going, and that's pretty much what I lived by and what I do live by still, and it's worked.
You're going to be okay.
Yep, I'll be just fine.
Well, again, thanks so much to our guests. That's a tough conversation, and really appreciate their candor. If you haven't already, please subscribe to What the How. We'd love to have you be part of the club. And until next time, take care.